This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. This is the first of our podcast in an 8-segment series. We're going to be talking about the tactics that we use in the streams, predominantly the mountain streams and the medium-sized streams. Once we get into the nitty-gritty of the tactics, I'm going to break these down into the seasonal approach. We'll talk about how you'd fish the small and medium streams in the spring, then get into it in the summer, and then go all the way in through to fall. Today, I'm just going to do an overview on what the trout require and some of the basic foods that they have. Next week, we'll get into reading the water and the importance of this with regard to determining the feeding station. But the trout, whether you're finding the small brook trout in the mountain streams or finding a big brown trout in the Yellowstone River, there is quite a similarity in what they require. Predominantly, they need good food, good cover, and good spawning areas. Once you learn to evaluate these things properly, you can usually do pretty well on your fish. The way we approach this is to have an understanding of just the various feeding stations throughout the pool. We'll get into that in detail in several weeks, but today we're going to go into some of the food. Before we get into the food, let me tell you about the two types of streams. I mentioned we're going to do the small streams and the medium streams. Now, what I'm calling a small stream would be a stream such as Furnace Brook and up in Vermont. Those streams north of Livingston, Montana, and the Crazy Mountains, the streams in the East Coast along the Blue Ridge. These are typically small mountain freestone streams. We're going to get into the tactics there. And by learning these tactics, you can easily extrapolate that information over into the medium-sized stream. Now, what am I calling a medium-sized stream? This would be a stream such as the Chateauguay River up in northern New York, especially right down where it runs into Canada. Big Stony Creek west of Edinburgh here in the Shenandoah Valley would be typical of this. The West Gallatin River in Montana, especially down in the Canyon area. The Oconaleftee down in North Carolina. These are what I'm calling the medium-sized streams. So when we get into this, you'll have some understanding of just what I'm talking about in these. Let's look at the food. Basically, the food is so important to the trout because they need to feed in an efficient way, meaning my thoughts on that is they need to get more food value out of the food that they're consuming than the energy required to get it. Now, we're all into the match the hatch game, and that is a wonderful approach. When I wrote my first book on trout fishing in Shenandoah National Park, I'd been studying the insects for many years, so I enjoy the match the hatch game. However, my tutor in the mountain streams didn't really get into it that heavy. Jack Sperry was probably the finest mountain trout fisherman I've ever known in my life. Jack's theory was that if you want to try to fish trout and catch them consistently, you should try to duplicate what nature is doing. And how Jack put this into practice and taught me to put it into practice, if you're in a stream and you see fish feeding on the surface, you grab a handful of whatever they're taking. If it's a little yellow fly, you get into your box and you match it with a little yellow fly. If they're feeding on a pretty big gray fly, you get in your box and match that with a pretty big gray fly. So that's pretty basic. Now, I enjoy the match the hatch game a little bit more than that, so you can play it the way you want to play it. The mayfly hatches are very important. They've been written about them. I've got them in both of my trout books, and there are just many excellent books out on the mayflies throughout all the trout streams in the country. In the east, the predominant hatches we get early in the year are the Quill Gordon hatches. This is the Eplis pluralis. Now, I match that with a Quill Gordon dry fly and a 14 or 16, and then the Mr. Rapidan dry fly, especially the Mr. Rapidan dry and a 14. When I first designed that, I was teaching a class at Lord Fairfax. The boys wanted a fly that would float well, something they could see, and something that matched the first several important flies we had here in Virginia. So that's where the Mr. Rapidan came about. Now, here in the east, the Stenonema vicarium, the March Brown, is a very important hatch all the way from Virginia up into Art Flicks country, up into Catskills and the Adirondacks. I've had wonderful fishing up there on March Browns, and you match this with a March Brown dry and a 12 or 14, or again, the Mr. Rapidan. Probably the last of the important mayfly hatches we have here in the east would be the Dorothea, the Liliel mayfly that is so popular throughout the Spring Creeks, but it's also a significant hatch in the mountain streams. We match this predominantly with the Murray's little sulfur dry fly in about a 16 or 18, or the one that Ed Shank does. Ed's got a great one in there we use a lot. Now, as you spread across the country, for instance, in the Midwest, the Hendrickson becomes very important. That's the first major hatch in the Midwest area. Sulfur gets more important later on, and then all of these sort of cap out the tail end of the season with the little Betis hatch. That's a little blue-winged Ollie mayfly in about a size 18 or 20. As you get into the Rocky Mountains, the slate drake becomes important. The pale morning dun is great. Some streams in the Rockies have great gray drake hatches, and that's good. And again, then they cap out toward the end of the season, well into October, with that little Betis mayfly. So these are all important hatches. Something I teach in my schools, and it's a very simplified approach, but a lot of the guys don't really care to get into the bugology the way some of us do. And if you looked at a hatch chart going from March in the spring all the way over to June, July, and you went across that hatch chart with your various insects, you'd see that the largest hatches of the big flies occur early in the year. For instance, as I mentioned, the Quill Gordon. That comes on in the east in many streams in March. Then as you progress all across the calendar, ending up with that little Dorothea later in the year, the flies go from darker colors to lighter colors and from larger size to smaller size. And as I say, that's a little bit of simplification, but if you don't want to really get real heavy into entomology, that's a good way to approach it. Now, the stoneflies, of course, are very important. Out in the Rockies, the giant stonefly, the Petronarsi californica, is a great fly. Richard Parks has a great match on that. There at Gardner, Montana, where he's fishing the Richard, Richard's got a great one that matches that. Now, here in the east, the most important one we have is that little yellow Sally. And that's a good hatch because it'll start here in the east probably around the middle or early part of April, middle of April, let's say, and then that hatch, I have seen the little yellow stoneflies on as late as July. And we do match that with a little yellow stonefly. Of course, we have one of our own in there called Murray's Little Yellow Stonefly at 16 and 18. And that's a very effective fly. The caddis flies are a big deal. I don't really go into a whole lot of nitty-gritty on matching the caddis. Predominantly what I see, they have olive bodies and gray bodies and some brown bodies. I use basically the Elkhair caddis tied with those body styles. Underwater, I like to use the hare's ear nymph, the red squirrel nymph. The olive caddis pupa is good, and the bright green caddis pupa is good. So I think if you're really going to get into the nitty-gritty on caddis, you really should learn to fish those underwater patterns. Now, the real sleeper that I've always felt are the terrestrials. The terrestrial patterns have always been a big deal on the spring creeks, but in the small mountain stream, the black ants that start showing up in April are very effective. If you're going to hit the Yellowstone up in the park above that first bridge, the Madison River in the park, that you get some great hopper fishing up in there. So don't ever overlook the terrestrial insects on any stream you're getting. Over on Henry's Fork, I used to get great fishing along the banks over there on Henry's Fork, just working those banks with the hoppers. Again, I sort of look at that, and I put it in one of my books as in a form of a hatch chart. The first terrestrial insects we see showing up in the spring are usually the black ants. These are followed by the cinnamon ants, which are closely followed by the beetles. Next, we start seeing the crickets and finally the hoppers. And that's pretty true, and in my personal fishing, I sort of reflect on that. The patterns I carry to match this are the black ant, the cinnamon ant, Mr. Rapidan ant, all these and from 14 down to 18. My favorite of the beetles, I must admit, is the Murray's Flying Beetle. I use that in 14, 16, 18. From probably the 1st of June all the way into the fall. I'm heavy into that. Ed Shank's cricket and a 12, 14, 16 is a great pattern. So is Dave's hopper and Shank's hopper in 12, up to maybe as big as a 10. I seldom go much bigger than a 10 on a hopper. Sometimes, as I mentioned on the Madison, I might throw an 8 at them. Minnows. Minnows are very important, especially in the larger stream, but even in the smaller streams, the sculpins, they're very, very important to all of them. Sculpins, dace, chub, shiners, all of those are very important. The larger streams, like I was saying, the Beaverkill up in New York, the Gallatin out in the Rockies, those, the minnows become much, much more important there. A typical selection of what I would carry with the minnow imitations, I like Dave Whitlock sculpin, the Murray sculpin, Shanks White Streamer, I would never want to be without. The strimps that we've developed here, both in olive and black, are good. The old Woolly Booger is a good standby. And I carry these from size 6 all the way down to size 10. That's pretty well rounds out the food, and that'll complete our podcast for today. If you have any questions on this, just give me a ring. But this is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. Thank you very much.